From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made during the last week of January when reports first surfaced of federal agents from ICE knocking on doors in Rochester and in surrounding suburbs. ICE stands for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. There's been a lot of talk about President Trump's stated goals of deporting millions of undocumented immigrants this year, although so far the federal government's daily reports of detainment and deportation doesn't look much different than what we saw during the Obama administration. Nevertheless, the buzz is making some people afraid. You heard last week with the new president and vice president of the Rochester City School Board that some families are keeping kids out of schools. Rochester Mayor Malik Evans recently said it is important for everyone to know their rights, to be well informed. He added that he didn't have direct information on possible ICE raids because the city of Rochester is not tipped off about such activity. Not now. And not when President Biden was in office either. That's not a typical course of business. The executive orders from President Trump have put occasional stress on cities. And this hour, we welcome Rochester Mayor Malik Evans to explain what we all should know about it. We'll also talk about whether other executive orders are having any impact on city business yet. And we will talk this hour about a separate issue that has been central in countless American cities, gun violence. And there's encouraging news to share. I'm going to quote now from Every Town for Gun Safety. Quote, American cities are becoming safer each year. For the past 2.5 years, violent crime has been trending downward, according to nearly every major data source. This holds true for overall violent crimes, homicides, aggravated assaults, and incidents especially involving guns. For example, FBI data reveal that annual homicides were down 7% in 2022, 13% in 2023, 26% in the first half of last year. The United States is likely experiencing the sharpest single-year homicide decrease in recorded history, end quote. Now, as it turns out, that trend holds true in Rochester. We are going to talk about that and more with Rochester Mayor Malik Evans, who is back with us. Mr. Mayor, it's great to have you. Thank you for making
good
time.
Good to be here, Evan. Happy Valentine's Day week. I hope you got your wife a gift.
Well, every day is Valentine's Day in my world.
Yeah, well, that's an easy answer. That sounds like somebody that hasn't gotten a gift.
Okay, but okay. That sounds about it. Mr. Mayor, let me start with what we are seeing with this new federal administration. And I want to give you some time to just talk about some of the buzz we're hearing about ICE, some of the fear of deportation, and what you want people to understand from the city governance perspective.
Let me tell you from the city governance standpoint, this is an important area for all cities. And this is going to remind people as to why the cities are the vanguards and the front and on the front line of trying to respond to the uncertainty that is coming out of the federal government. Okay, there has been lots of uncertainty. I have never seen anything like this in my time in public life. For example, I just want to give you, over the last 2 weeks, I've met with over 200, both Assemblyman Congressman Morelli and Adam Bello, and I met with over close to 200 community-based organizations that were affected to this. I've spoken to the Council of Churches. I've spoken to our state delegation. I've spoken with, I've had 200 mayors on a call. As it relates to all of the things that we have seen that have come out of Washington that have caused a lot of chaos in cities, and people are looking to mayors to not only push back, but also to give informed information. Let me start with immigration. As you know, and I've said this to people, Rochester is not informed when there is a quote-unquote ICE raid. We have not seen widespread ICE raids here in Rochester. But what we have made clear is that it is important for us to, number one, remind people that Rochester remains a welcoming city, number one. And number two, it is important for people to know that they have rights and for people to understand their rights. They had rights in 2008. They had rights in 2012. They had those rights in 2016. And they have those rights again in 2024 and 25. So I think that is absolutely critical as we talk about this. What has been very concerning for us is the amount of fear that has been sowed throughout communities across this country and including in Rochester. We are very concerned about refugee resettlement. For example, we have individuals that have worked their entire lives to be able to come to America, live here, they pay taxes, they follow the rules, and yet, there was part of an executive order that pulled away refugee resettlement as a means to resettling people in the city. So that has been a challenge for us. So we have made sure that our employees are informed. I have spoken to numerous groups to mention, as I just outlined earlier, talking about how you handle the immigration stuff. So that's on the immigration side. But let me also add a point on this federal freeze side. That's something that has also been extremely concerning to folks. We think that it is illegal. As I have said in many news reports, this is not about politics, but about people. And money that is appropriated by Congress, those dollars belong to the cities. And then the other point I'll make is, this isn't the federal government's money. This is my money. This is your money. This is your grandmother's money. This is your sister and brother's money. These are tax dollars that are sent from residents to Washington, D.C., allocated by Congress, and on programs that were passed by Congress. And there should never, ever be any doubt where those dollars belong. They belong to the organizations and the people that went through the legislative process in which they went through the appropriation process. And that has caused untold angst and unnecessary drama in this city and across cities in America.
Okay, so a lot there. Let me just take piece by piece. Just on the funding part that you mentioned, and forgive me, I'm trying to keep up with what feels like new waves of news every day from the White House.
It's hard to keep up. It's been like 4 weeks have spent like 4 years for me so far.
Yeah, I take that point. Now, are you aware of any direct, I don't know if threat is the right word, order from the federal government that the city of Rochester will lose XYZ funding if you are still called a sanctuary city, if you are not complying with this order or that? Have you been told you're about to lose a bunch of federal funding?
So far, we have not seen anything above the pause that we saw. Now, when the pause happened, we got lots of information from the federal government saying, hey, this pause is happening. Nothing is going to happen right now. So it sent everyone into a tizzy. Then, once the injunction was placed, we got notes saying everything is going to continue as course. Just a distraction. We can't have that. We can't have that. But even if that was to happen, I will tell you that we would fight back, because you can't have the rule of law only when it benefits you. And the rule of law says that if money is appropriated by Congress and promised to entities, we have an obligation to receive those dollars. So you saw that pause, but the threat is still there. The threat is still looming, but we feel as though the threat is illegal. We feel as though the threat is not correct, because we have an obligation to run our city the way we want to run it. You can't say that you want to have states' rights and states' control and local control only when it benefits you.
Well, and so it sounds like you and a lot of your colleagues in leading cities across the country could take the federal government to court if you get to that point.
Absolutely. Well, I would just remind people that I sued gun manufacturers. I've sued opioid manufacturers. I've sued Hyundai. I've sued Kia. So I think that you can look at our record in terms of pushing back on things that we feel as though are unfair and unjust, and you can draw your own conclusions on what we will do.
I know we're moving into the hypothetical, but we're moving into this pretty quickly. And so what I want to understand from your perspective is what happens if you see the federal government decide, we're going to ignore the courts. Next hour, we've got a couple of retired judges joining us, and they're going to talk about the fear of what a constitutional crisis looks like if they're ignoring the courts. Here's what Vice President J.D. Vance said when he was a senator back in 2021 about the idea of the federal government, and specifically the White House, just ignoring court orders they don't like. Here's what he said, quote, we should fire every single mid-level bureaucrat, every civil servant in the administrative state, replace them with our own people. And when the courts, because you will get taken to court, and when the courts try to stop you from what you are trying to do, stand before the country like Andrew Jackson did and say, well, the Chief Justice has made his ruling, now let him try to enforce it.
Well,
quote. What do you make
of
that?
I remember hearing that in AP European History. By the way, I got a 5 on that exam. And that was one of the famous quotes from Andrew Jackson. The bottom line is that either we have a democracy or we don't. So if that happens, we no longer have a democracy, and we'll cross that bridge when we get it. I mean, I don't know what would happen.
But you're assuming the courts will be a bulwark against just total concentrated power.
They better be. If not, they're not doing their jobs. As should Congress be a bulwark against. Could you imagine if city council passed a law that I didn't like? I have two options when city council passes a law. I could veto it, or I could sign it. If it's passed and I don't like it, and let's say I try to veto it and then it's overwritten, there's no way that Malik Evans, and I'm held to a different standard. Some of it has to do with, we won't go into details. Some people can get away with different things.
Okay.
But I think Barack Obama wouldn't be able to get away with any of the stuff that's happening right now. But that's another show. Could you imagine if I said, you know what? I don't like what city council came up with or with city court. There's lots of stuff that the courts do in New York State that I don't like. I just lost a case on something that I didn't like that was related to records that I thought was wrong. But guess what? We have to comply with the law. I have to comply with the law. So are we saying that certain administrations are above the law and others are not? Barack Obama, even George W. Bush would not be able to get away with that type of rhetoric. And if we're going to have a country, and if we believe in the rule of law, let's follow the rule of law. If we lose in the courts, well, that's a different story. You take it with the court of public opinion. But who also has an important role to play here is Congress. Congress has an important role to play here. I mean, if I was in the majority in Congress and a president told me, I don't care that you appropriated trillions of dollars for these programs. I don't care.
I'm not going to spend it.
Yeah. Or I'm going to spend it in the way that I can. You can't do that. You also cannot tell the city of Rochester, I don't like the way in which you talk about pick a topic. So I'm going to tell you, I'm going to hold your money up. Are you kidding me? That's extortion. We don't give in to extortionists. The United States of America doesn't give in to extortionists. And I can tell you right now, the city of Rochester and probably about 400 mayors, we have decided we are not going to give in to extortionists because we believe in following the law. Someone asked me the other day, they said, Mayor, what's the one way that you would push back? I said, well, they said, would you ever break the law? And you know what I said? Absolutely not. You know why I wouldn't break the law? Because I put my hand on a Bible and I swore to an oath. If I'm going to break the law, then I should not be in government. We should not be in government. So if we follow the Andrew Jackson adage, who, by the way, that is not a president you want to model yourself after.
No.
I mean, Andrew Jackson, the Trail of Tears, he destroyed the bank. He was all about revenge. The National Bank, he gave poor Nicholas Biddle a heart attack because he got rid of the National Bank without congressional approval. That is not somebody we want to model democracy. About that's you can have any historian on the show will tell you that. So God help us if we follow that way of following the law. If there's something that I don't agree with, guess what I do? I go to court, or I veto something, or I get the public involved. I just don't say I'm going to do whatever the hell I want.
I am here for the Mayor Evans sidetrack dissertation on President Andrew Jackson.
I can tell you, we can do a whole show on Andrew Jackson. We can do an entire show on Andrew Jackson.
Tell me if I'm wrong, it sounds like your understanding is so far, we have not seen an elevated number of arrests from ICE or deportations in Rochester.
We have not seen that yet. And again, I always say yet because this has been the first time in 3 weeks where I felt like it's been 30 years because the amount of, I think they were calling it flooding the zone. The zone has been flooded so much that it's hard for us to even keep track on the various things. I literally have somebody right now in one of our departments that is keeping track of every single federal action that we are hearing that might impact the city of Rochester. I'm talking to the Democratic Mayors Association, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, the New York Conference of Mayors, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, on all this stuff that is happening. I mean, this has intruded upon the mayor's calendar where I am dealing with things that I did not have to deal with my first 3 years in office. It has been dizzying. It has been dizzying. And then the sad thing is that civics is no longer taught. So we have people in the media who don't even understand this stuff. So they're calling, you know, my poor communications department because they don't understand it. And so we have to give them a lesson about, well, there's the branches of power. And no, you can't take a judge to jail if they make a ruling you like. And no, you can't silence the media. And no, you can't go lock Evan up if he's saying something that you disagree with or because he's reporting facts. I mean, this is what people are afraid of. There are people who are from Puerto Rico who are citizens of the United States who serve in our military and carry U.S. passports that are afraid because they think that they may be rounded up. I mean, so a lot of this is fear. I mean, fear is very powerful. And it works for some people. And unfortunately, this is what we're seeing right now. And this is why it's more important than ever that cities are clear, articulate, and collaborative to make sure that we push back on a lot of the items that we're seeing coming, the discord and just confusion that we're seeing coming out of Washington, D.C.
Mayor, you said that Rochester is a welcoming city. Rochester is a sanctuary city, is that right?
Rochester is considered a city of sanctuaries that has a different definition than other places. It means that we follow the law, and that is what we do. We never have coordinated with ICE. The federal government does not require localities to coordinate with ICE, and also we don't have the resources to do that. That is a federal function. And Rochester cannot be asked to do a federal function. That's not that. Just like we don't ask them, they didn't come and do the big arrest that I had last week when we took, you know, when we executed 7 search warrants and seized 4 pounds of cocaine. We didn't call the federal government and said, "Hey, we're getting ready to go do a drug raid. You want to come?" We didn't do that. We did what we needed to do. So they have their job. Go do your job, but don't expect us and coerce us to do your work that you're supposed to do yourself.
I think sometimes people hear Sanctuary City and the difference is they hear defy as opposed to, hey, we don't coordinate with ICE. That's one
correct.
Thing.
We follow the law.
Do you defy ICE?
Defy?
Do you seek to undermine what ICE is doing?
You heard what I said. I swear an oath and I follow the law.
Gotcha.
Unlike some folks in this country. The hypocrisy that we are seeing, not only just, and this is why people hate politics. You know, and I always remind people, you know, you get these people, I'm not a politician. Yes, you are. You're a politician in a different job. You just get tired of it's good for thee, but not for me. And you see that regularly. You see it regularly. And the left does it. The right does it. The Democrats do it. Republicans do it. It's just ridiculous. The law has to be followed. If you swear an oath to a constitution, you got to follow the doggone law. If not, then you leave and you go do other things. But if you get elected to office, you swear an oath without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion. I will protect, defend the Constitution of the state of New York, the Constitution of the United States, according to the best of my ability, so help me God. That is the oath that I take. Now, if you have anybody that's in elective office that wants to deviate away from that oath, they should not be in elected office because they are saying that they want to violate the laws of this country. And that's what we're seeing. That's what we're seeing. It's just you feel like you're in bizarro world. I mean, it's just so weird because it's like, okay, you got to do this, but we're going to violate the law. It's interesting. It's interesting, and I just hope that we don't have a constitutional crisis.
Talking to Mayor Malik Evans of the City of Rochester, it's 844-295-TALK. If you want to join the conversation, it's 844-295-8255. 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. We're going to talk about a big, big change in gun violence numbers in just a moment here. Again, it's connections at WXXI.org is the email address, and you can join the chat on the WXXI News YouTube page if you're watching along there. Before we turn the page on this, anything you want people to know about knowing their rights? Is there anything else that they should understand?
Yeah, I think that the New York Immigration Coalition, you know, we're not an expert in this at the City of Rochester, nor do we try to be. We have really worked a lot with community organizations, and I want to say the New York Immigration Coalition is really where people should be going to get the information, because one of the things that happened, you know, I was coming back from my sister's wedding, and I started getting all these calls, and I couldn't talk to them because the flight attendant told me, sir, turn your phone off. We're going to kick you off this plane. We're being raided. So information that is correct is absolutely critical. We got to make sure that we give people correct information. We have to make sure people understand their rights. And the New York Immigration Coalition really has worked very hard to make sure people understand that. They've been great. I want to point people to them. And then other community-based organizations that have the information, because you have rights. For example, no one can just walk into your house. You cannot. I can't walk into here without a warrant and say, Evan, give me all your information. And there's a difference between a judicial warrant and administrative warrant. You know, so people really have to make sure they know their rights and that they're connecting with organizations. And sometimes a lot of people want to help, but you can actually hurt if you don't have the right information and if you don't have the right knowledge. So please connect with experts. Legal Aid Society is another great organization. Please connect with Legal Aid. Law New York. There's all these organizations that are out there that can actually help with this. Some people want to help and they don't know what the hell they're talking about. And that actually does more damage than good.
Mr. Mayor, there will be more time later this year for this if we get to that.
God help us.
But I do want to briefly ask you, because a number of listeners have asked, they are aware that a different member of City Council has declared for this year's mayoral race, re-election in your future. Is that something that you want?
Re-election is in my future. As you know, I was honored to be selected by the Monroe County
That's
Democratic
right.
Committee this past weekend with over almost 67% of the vote. I think politics would take care of itself, but I will tell you that I have very little time for politics right now. I understand it, but I have a city to run, and regardless of what happens in the mayoral election, I'll be running the city until December 31st at 11:59 p.m., and we need to make sure that we work.
We'll talk politics on another day.
On another day. I think we got
I know you love
issues.
Politics. You yeah. love campaigns.
right.
Well, we'll talk about that another
well,
day.
I call it silly season as we get it.
Mr. Mayor, I'm looking at data, Rochester data that the city has released on the following when it comes to shootings. Shootings from 2021 to roughly the present. 2021 going forward, they're down 53%. Shooting victims down 51%. Fatal shootings, 55%. 63 fatal shootings in 2022 to a number of 28. So again, more than half has been eliminated here. And I want to start by asking you what you think has contributed to that change.
First off, let me say what's contributed to it is a lot of work around prevention, intervention, and suppression. Someone told me, you know, I don't pay attention to a lot of social media stuff, and someone said, well, you know, it's because the national trend. Well, guess what? The national trend is down, but there are also some cities, because I talk to a lot of mayors, where shootings and killings are still up. So I think that, you know, we haven't arrived. We're not dancing. We're not doing the Tootsie Roll or the Cupid Shuffle or the electric slide. But we are, we should, I am gratified, but not satisfied. I mean, and you know, and there are still haters out there that don't even want to recognize the progress of the shootings that have happened here. I mean, you had, and you said the number, 419 shooting victims in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. That's a lot of people being shot. And that number would drop to 205 last year. You know, so... This is it's the combination of a lot of work: prevention, intervention, and suppression. The gun-involved violence elimination program has been absolutely critical for us to bring down the number of shootings. That is where we zero in on targets of people that are actually perpetrators in terms of carrying guns. But a lot of our prevention efforts. We have ramped up the number of people that with jobs. We have ramped up the number of people in our advanced peace program. We have ramped up the number of people in our workforce development programs. Because if you're involved in positive activities, you don't have time to get into nonsense. We've tried to get our Pathways to Peace program. We've ramped that up to make sure that they are able to see where a lot of these arguments are happening and then stopping them before they end up ending up in a homicide or someone getting shot. So that is absolutely critical. But I will tell you my one frustration is I understand politics and I understand haters, but for people to say, you know what, yeah, that happened, but so what? Well, we're back down to pre-pandemic levels. We're almost back to where we were in 2015-16, which is where we want to get to. We still have a long way to go, but I think it's a pretty big deal for fatal shootings to fall 55% from 2021 to 2024. And by the way, I've only been in office, people say 4 years, it's only been 3 years and 2 months. So we've been able to do that in that short period of time, and we still got a long way to go, but it's a pretty, pretty big deal because there still are places in this country, and I won't name them because I love the mayors there, where they're seeing increases in shootings last year. They saw increases in homicides last year. We didn't see that in Rochester. We can't take it for granted. And we have to keep our foot on the gas to make sure that we continue to drive down these numbers.
Okay. And looking at those, as you mentioned, those national numbers, it is true that across the board, crime is down. It's not true that's the case in every city. That
that's
is
right.
not the case uniformly. But generally speaking, it's down in a pretty big way. Best I can tell, Rochester is a little ahead of that curve.
That's correct.
You know, overall, that's a very positive trend. Why do some people will look at this and I think understandably say the reason nationwide gun violence is down from 2021 is the pandemic was so detrimental to disconnecting people, shutting down services, making people not only feel depressed, disconnected, not going to school, not having feeling a purpose. Do you agree with some of that?
I absolutely agree with that. And I think the pandemic, we're still feeling the effects of it. The mental health. First off, we have always had mental health issues in this country, and gun violence is probably in the top three, right? I put mental health as number one, and you see it right here in the city. I see it among elected officials. The mental health crisis that we have in this community was exacerbated by the pandemic, and we have still not recovered from that. That's why I have mental health professionals in our libraries. I have mental health professionals in our R centers, which I never thought I would be able to do. The pandemic, all it really did was just expose this. But not only did it expose it, it exacerbated it. So it made people want to go off the trigger much faster. and I got the cases. I mean, we had cases where someone took someone else's seat on the couch and they came back and pistol whipped or shot the person. This is a true story. This is a true story. This is not something made up. Someone being stabbed through the forehead because they had an argument that was taking place. The escalation that the pandemic caused, we definitely see this in pedestrian side. In fact, I'm giving I know another media outlet, I'm sure that your XXI, you don't mind, I'm speaking at the Beacon on our Vision Zero program that's coming up.
Oh, yeah. Because we're going to have them on the program soon, right?
Yeah. So
tomorrow at 1 o'clock.
So I'm speaking at that, but that's an exact result of pandemic shutdowns and people driving 120 miles per hour down streets now that we're trying to put back from. So yes, the pandemic played a major role in violence. It exacerbated a lot of the stuff that we already knew, and it definitely was a contributing factor to what we saw. But we still got a long way to go. But the pandemic was just one of many things that were happening.
All right, let me grab David from Rochester on the phone from Mayor Evans. Hello, David. Go ahead.
Hi, Chris, and thank you, Mayor Evans, for all you're doing for the city. As you're obviously well aware, the NIH is under attack under the current administration. It's getting much worse. And now we have a new leadership of DHHS coming in, which is very questionable. I used to serve on the HIV Planning Council in New York City before I moved up to Monroe County. Mm-hmm. And the AIDS crisis in Monroe County is getting worse. And COVID-19 exacerbated that because of the diversion of funds. You have people living in Monroe County who are experiencing significant food insecurity. They are not seeing an increase in food stamps while we're seeing food prices skyrocket. We have people with AIDS in Monroe County who are going hungry. And that undermines the antiretroviral therapy that we're giving them to control the virus.
Absolutely.
And I want to figure out what can be done with your administration so that people with AIDS have some degree of relief and protection while they're coming under attack from multiple sources of this new administration that's leading towards disease-related malnutrition.
Yeah, David, let me just jump in. Is this a city issue in your mind?
It's not a city issue, but it is something. But his question is right on the mark because we work very closely, for example, with Trillium. We worked with them on the expansion of their food pantry. And our HOPWA dollars, H-O-P-W-A, something that a lot of people don't know or pay attention to, it comes to us from the federal government in the form of a block grant that we use for specifically individuals with AIDS to make sure that they have housing. So any changes that the federal government freezes or cuts there would have a detrimental effect on individuals that are currently suffering from HIV/AIDS and is very important. And I'll just tell you something that was extremely important over the weekend as it relates to NIH. And I'll just read this. Last year, $9 billion of the $35 billion that the National Institute of Health granted for research was used for administrative overhead, what is known as indirect costs. Today, and this was on Saturday, I believe, NIH lowered the maximum indirect cost research institutions can charge the government to 15% above what many major foundations allow, which is much lower than the 60% that some institutions charge the government today. This change will save $4 billion immediately, so the government says, but that means that research is going to be down by about 69% at Harvard. The indirect costs, 67.5% at Yale, 63.7% at Johns Hopkins, and I don't know what it's going to be at the University of Rochester. So, listen, elections have consequences, and I think people need to understand that. The progress that we've made in bringing down the HIV/AIDS rates, I hope that we won't backslide, but to the caller's point, there is a chance that could happen, particularly if you attack organizations like Trillium and other community health organizations across the country that cater towards individuals who have lived in the shadows and have been marginalized. They are very concerned, individuals that run those organizations. And I've heard from people across the country as it relates to this. So although it's not something that is within the city's control, it's something that affects the city. When the dog wags its tail, unfortunately, cities always get affected. And this issue around HIV and AIDS is no different.
David, thank you. Let me get back to the question of violence. Jason, watching on the WXXI News YouTube channel, says, is the city still declaring a gun violence state of emergency? And if so, what does the mayor need to see to allow the state of emergency to end?
Right now, the answer is under 10 shootings a year.
That's what you need to see.
That's what I need to see. I am not, because we need to dramatize this. We have become desensitized to people getting shot. It should be rare. It should be as rare as a plane crash. It should be rare. And until we see the rarity of gun violence, I will continue to have that state of emergency. And what that does is that gives me tools to be able to do what I need to do. And that gun violence state of emergency is the reason why we're also seeing a decline here. You know, you mentioned some of the national trends that we've seen. Because, you know what, I've been able to prevent a lot of stuff before it happens. I can't prevent everything, but there's some stuff that I've been able to prevent without going into a lot of detail. And I think that's why it's important. But why should anyone get shot? It's barbaric. It is inhumane. It makes no sense. It should not be part of something that we take regularly. When I talked to one of my favorite mayors of Glasgow, Scotland, Susan Aitken, I love her. We were in a group. We were in a group at a mayor's summit, and we all had to go around the room. This was 2022, and they said, "What's the number one problem?" And I said, "Gun violence." And she couldn't believe it. She said, "Wow." Mm. She goes, "We haven't had someone shot in Glasgow, Scotland in 15 years." So, and Glasgow is bigger than the city of Rochester, by the way. So that's why I had this, and I think the next day I declared the gun violence state of emergency. So because we have to say that one person getting shot is too many. But if we can get down to 10 a year, 10 people being shot a year, then maybe I'll lift the emergency.
One other point on that, and then what we'll do is we'll take our only break of the hour. We've got more phone calls, more feedback, and I want to stay on some of these themes, in particular how some of the city initiatives regarding poverty and opportunity might affect violence as well. But just briefly, when the mayor said a shooting in the city should be as rare as a plane crash, a lot of us immediately thought of what the recent plane crash, and a lot of people were reminded that the last commercial airliner jet crash in this country before last month was 2009 near Buffalo.
And I remember it like it was yesterday.
16 years ago. So when you said as rare as a plane crash, I admit my mind was like, I mean, I don't think that's realistic. And then you hear about other countries like Glasgow.
It's happening.
If it's every 15 years.
Yeah, and you know, I always say
it's a different culture.
Exactly. And I always say I wish I had time to do a podcast. I just don't have time. Maybe I'll do one. Maybe we can work.
You can
that
come here whenever you want.
Yeah, maybe we should do one. No, I'm serious. I think I talk to the team about this all the time. But I would have Susan on because they have many of the same challenges that we have. I mean, they may have a stabbing every now and then. They have poverty. They have housing insecurities.
But they don't have guns in the numbers.
But they don't have guns in the numbers that we do. That's
so it's a cultural change.
It's a cultural change. But you know what? There still are cities that, because I still think that if we change hearts and minds of individuals to make them think that yes, and I'm a Second Amendment guy, so let me just put that out there. I'm not looking to take anybody's guns away. But remember, most of the people who are perpetrating gun crimes, they're not. Permit.
They're not following the law anyway.
They're not carrying permits. So that's a separate issue. So how do we change hearts and minds so people can realize that if you're having an argument with a family member, you probably don't want to pull out your 9mm and blast them, right? We saw this weekend. Someone shot. Guess what it was? It was over an argument. They had an argument at a bar. Come on. And these weren't kids. These were middle-aged individuals. Our age, Evan. I mean, we're talking 50 years old. Why, over an argument, over a dumb argument in a bar fight turns into a dumb argument. That should be rare, and we should say that we won't tolerate that in our community. And that's why this gun of violence emergency is there to dramatize it. And I wouldn't have done the emergency if I thought it wouldn't have made a difference. But when I can show through empirical evidence that fatal shootings are down 55%, that's why we have the gun violence state of emergency, and we'll continue to have it.
And it stays, yeah. Only break of the hour. We're right back with Rochester Mayor Malik Evans on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, a pair of retired judges sit down with us to talk about two very separate issues. The first is, what happens if the White House decides they don't have to abide by judicial orders anymore? What then? Is it a constitutional crisis, and what do you do about it? We'll also talk about the new centralized arraignment plan for Monroe County, what that means for people who are arrested and charged with the crime, what that means for protecting the community. That's next hour. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. We're going to get as much of your feedback in as we can here. And so let me just keep working through with Mayor Malik Evans. Sam in Rochester next on the phone. Hi, Sam. Go ahead.
Hi. This is a kind of a broad question, but, you know, I think that I noticed that the current administration and the Republicans sort of in a general sense at the federal level seem really sort of, states' rights, right? So at the federal level, we're going to say all these things, and it's the states get to decide. And so I'm seeing a trend in politics in general that, like, local is mattering more and more. And I'm curious, like, I've missed a decent amount of the program, which I am sorry about, but I want to know, I guess, from the mayor's perspective in broad terms, what does he see, what do you see, Mayor, as the role of a local government, given the current sort of climate politically and legislatively at the federal level? Like, what can we do and what can you do, I guess, more specifically as a local elected official to try to support and protect Rochesterians given what's happening federally?
Yeah, great question. But let me tell you something. So I got to put my political science hat on, and I bang this drum every year. It's not that local matters more and more now. Local has always mattered more and more now. It was Tip O'Neill that said that all politics are local. Politics have always been local, but we've always paid attention to what happens on the national level. I'm hoping that people now realize why local politics is so very, very, very important. There's a lot of things that we can do. We can make sure, and I mentioned this before, we can make sure that we collaborate with organizations that are making a difference on the ground and that they are working with City Hall hand in hand to push back on a lot of this lunacy. It's why when we saw pharmacies close, we didn't wait to the federal government to come in and rescue us like Superman. We worked with the hospital system and helped start the Rochester Pharmacy Coalition and opened up within 2 months a brand new pharmacy in the 19th Ward. It's why when we saw food insecurity, we took dollars to make sure that we worked with organizations like Trillium Health and identified 50 bodegas within the city of Rochester to make sure that they expanded healthy food. It's why we said in the city of Rochester that we are going to plant 6,000 new trees by the end of the year to make sure that we push for our environmental justice. It's why we made sure that we sued ExxonMobil and said, you know what? You know what? Along the rivers of the Genesee River with our vacuum oil project, that we're going to make that a priority and that we are going to make sure that we still pursue environmental justice, even though the federal government doesn't see environment as important. And it's why we said we're going to build new homes and why we're going to continue to invest in affordable housing, even though we know that there is uncertainty at the federal level. Politics has always been local. This is not anything new. And it's important for people to understand why who you elect to your city council, why who you have as your mayor. That is why it's important. So your question is right on the money. It is also important because guess what? I'm a network of thousands of other mayors, Democrats and Republicans across this country that don't care about who controls Congress or who is in the White House, because every day we have to answer to constituents to make sure that their garbage is picked up, that their water is clean, and that they have the ability to live their best lives and thrive, not just economically, but also socially and politically. So politics has always been local, and there's a lot we can do. There's a lot we can do. We are not going to be held hostage. We are not going to be bullied. We are not going to be pushed aside or cast out. We're going to do all we can at a local level to make sure that we push back, and we will use the courts. We will use the court of public opinion, and we will make sure that we have a thriving Rochester regardless of who it is that occupies the White House.
Sam, thank you for that. Peg and Irondequoit next. Hey, Peg, go ahead.
Well, hello, Evan and Mayor Evans. I really appreciate everything that you said in the first, 5 or 6 minutes of this hour about the rule of law and the impact on democracy when we don't have the rule of law. And I'm wondering what your suggestions would be for what we as individuals can do or should do to impact that.
Yeah.
And I'll take your response off the air. Thank you, Peg.
Thank you, Peg. And that is the question, because people sometimes feel so helpless. First off, I think people need to understand that they have the power and that they need to work to ensure that they have the Constitution on their side, but connect with groups that are getting together and working on these issues. I was at a meeting at the Urban League on Friday. It was probably 40 different organizations that were there that were collaborating on what they can do. The Greater Council of Churches has been working on different items that they're working on. If you go to a church, a synagogue, a mosque, a nonprofit organization, your neighborhood association. In Rochester, we're launching NIA, NIA, Neighbors in Action, where we are going to be giving dollars to neighborhood organizations to work on some of these challenges that are there. And they're going to be applying for dollars. We're going to announce the winners at the end of March. There is so much that people can do. The thing that I think that is very important is that we don't sit in the house by ourselves with the news on. Because if you do that, you're going to get depressed and you're going to feel helpless. You need to get with like-minded people that are working on these issues and volunteer with them, work with them. Call Catholic Family Center. Call Refugees Helping Refugees, who had to take down their website because they were being harassed, which is just crazy. They're legal. This is a legal organization. These are individuals that came here legally, that are working to build a better life. Work with them to see how you can help them. Connect with Catholic Family Center to see how you can help them in that space. Call a school and help to tutor young people with the threat of Title I dollars being under effect. Mm. By the way, did you know that if you shutter the Department of Education and they cut Title I dollars, I think New York State would be affected by $9 billion, which, by the way, I don't think that they would do that because red states benefit from Title I just as much as blue states because Title I dollars go to poor districts, and a lot of rural districts are poor. So a lot of these things that are being bantied about, the proof will be in the pudding because you could actually be hurting the people who you profess that you really want to help. But I think her question is so important because I've had so many people tell me that they don't listen to the news anymore. You know what? I upped my newspaper subscriptions, even though I think the press has really leave something to be desired because of all the cuts that's happened. But the press is more important than ever. It's more important than ever. Buy more subscriptions. I hate to say it. I'm not trying to listen. You have to listen to the news more and listen to multiple outlets, international outlets, not just locally here in the U.S. I listen to them all. I'm on BBC. I'm on Al Jazeera. I listen to all of these things. Listen to what right wing, left wing. You have to listen and we have to be informed. The minute we stop being informed is the minute that we lose facts and the minute that people will be able to do things to you that they are not able to do based upon the rule of law because you won't know better and you won't hear what's going on. So we can't have people saying, I'm not going to watch the news anymore. I'm not going to pay attention. We got to make sure that we stay connected and that we stay plugged in.
Kathy in Chilai says, has Mayor Evans commented on New York City Mayor Eric Adams' directives to his police force to comply with ICE detentions? Is the mayor aware of any pushback from Governor Hochul or others about that?
I'm not aware of any pushback. I can't comment on New York City. I don't know what goes on. I got enough worrying about what's going on in Rochester.
Fair enough. Let me get Robert in Fairport next. Back to the subject of violence. Hello, Robert. Go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. RPD has an open data portal that has a lot of data on crime and shootings and all this kind of stuff, and it's kind of interesting. Even though shootings are down, if you go through the data and you go as far back as 2015, 81% of the victims of shootings in Rochester, New York were black.
Yeah.
If you do that for 2024, it's 81%. If you do it for 2025, it's 100%. The black population in the city of Rochester is about 37%. Why are blacks twice as likely to be victims of shootings?
Well, I think that you look at the availability of firearms, and I think that if you look at the historical challenges that we have in our communities, and I think the other question is why is it that blacks disproportionately have a high level of guns that are trafficked in their community? That's really the question that should be asked. Why is the access to illegal firearms so easy to have those trafficked in communities of color? I think that is a challenge that we have, and one of the things that why we did a gun trace data report, because we wanted to track to see where some of these firearms are coming from. That's the challenge.
What'd you find out there?
Well, we found out that a lot of them are stolen, and a lot of them come locally. But guess what? There's not a single, you know what else will be figured out? There's not a single gun manufacturer or a single gun shop within the city of Rochester. But yet you have these guns, illegal guns, that are trafficked here. A lot of them come from Ohio, Georgia, Pennsylvania, is where along the iron pipeline where a lot of them come from. So, you know, it's a complex strategy. That you have to continue to unfail, but the disproportionate numbers of people, and not only just African Americans, but African American males, which is why we have this gun violence emergency, because we're losing too many people are losing their lives, and losing the chance to live for their families and provide for their families and their community. So it's something that has been going on in this country and in cities for decades, and it's something that, as I said earlier, it should be rare. It should not be regular. And I'm glad he mentioned the open data portal. We're very transparent. I talked about trust and transparency. I urge everyone to check out that open data portal that the caller mentioned, because it has all of these the data that we mentioned. If you don't believe me saying it, you can go back and look. And you can also look at FBI data as well.
Robert, thank you. One of the components of your very busy first 3 years and 2 months, as you say, was a UBI program. And when we talk about poverty, I don't want to imply that only people in poverty are committing violence. We know that is not exclusively the case.
That's correct.
We certainly know that high poverty communities tend to struggle with violence as well. And UBI was a chance for the city to see how this would work. If we offered 500 a month, what was it, 600 a month?
500 a month.
500 a month for 300-some households, how they would do, how that would affect them. Could there be more? Does it have to come from federal dollars? Can the city get more involved in the future? What did you see? Part of what I'm kind of curious about is, was there any violence in cities that had UBI? I mean, I don't know if you have that offhand, but I would kind of assume there wasn't, but I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have that data yet in terms of, but I can tell you from our perspective, we haven't seen any violence for anyone that was involved with GBI. And we're going to continue.
And I say UBI, GBI, yeah, thank
UBI,
you, Mayor.
GBI,
thank you.
Guaranteed Basic Income, but we're going to continue to look to see how we can. In fact, I'm meeting with some folks next week or two, Courtney, to have a conversation about GBI continuing in the city, how it could work and all that good stuff. But, you know, I'm a big believer in the program. I think that it was very successful, you know, and you know, I've been on this show ad nauseum talking about knocking down all of the crazy stereotypes about people. Oh, they don't want to work. That wasn't true. Almost all of them worked. Almost all of them saved. Almost all of them put down payments for cars and houses, paid down debt. And we know, by the way, the federal government has a version of this. It's called the Earned Income Tax Credit, which, by the way, only there's probably about 10% of the people that are eligible for that don't take advantage of it. So programs like that are absolutely critical to decreasing poverty, along with other things. We believe that our positive rent reporting that we just rolled out a couple of weeks ago is also extremely important to that. That's why we have the Office of Financial Empowerment. Our Future Fund, which launches in September, which is every child entering kindergarten will have a savings account in the city of Rochester, is important. Economic opportunity is extremely important to driving down violence. And that question, that you can do a dotted line to it. You give people economic opportunity, you will see violence decrease, period. Because if you have a job, it's why my youth opportunity agenda that I came into office with, where I said any kid that wants a job should be able to get a job. Those kids that are involved in those jobs programs, they don't get in trouble. They don't get involved in violence. Economic opportunity is one of the best violence prevention tools we could have in this country. And it's cheaper than incarcerating somebody for $50,000 or $60,000 a year.
All right, briefly, because I got to move quickly. Our Future Fund is what does that look like? What does that seed look like?
So that seed looks like every child will get and we'll roll this out. I'm getting ahead of the announcement, but
I'm not trying to make you make breaking news, but
yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah, we're not breaking news, but as you know, we talked about our children's savings account. It's actually going to be called Our Future Fund, mm-hmm. Is what it's going to be called. And any child entering kindergarten right now, the plan is in the city school district starting in the fall, will get an account that will follow them for all 12 years of schooling. And they will get an initial investment, and then there will be investments that will be deposited throughout their 12 years of school. Their families will also be able to put those dollars in, and then they will be able to use that for school, for jobs.
Can't touch it until graduation?
Well, the goal is that they're not supposed to touch it before graduation, but there may be provisions for if things come up, they may be able to use it.
I mean, this is your specialty, the work that you've done.
Oh, yes.
Critical. The mayor's career has focused on issues like this. We should talk about that with your team on a separate
day. That's right. This is a whole separate show. Yeah. And I would love to have Angela Rollins from the Office of Financial Empowerment to come in.
That's a great idea. Briefly, City Council had some debates about what kind of good cause, if they're going to do good cause eviction legislation. Are you comfortable with what was decided there?
Well, I think the proof will be in the pudding. We'll see. I mean, what I notice about what happens sometimes with politicians is people think that there are silver bullets. There is no silver bullets to the housing to the housing crisis in the city of Rochester. And you know, you're not going to have a million. New units built because you had that. And then the other thing is, most people who get evicted, it's because of non-payment of rent. Right? So it's not gonna change everything.
And they would still get evicted, you're saying?
They still get evicted, okay. Right. So but it's important why we continue to focus on this. I mean, we are close to 4,000 in 3 years, 4,000 affordable and market rate housing that we've been able to do in 3 years. And you know how we've been able to do that? With partnership. With partnership. And we're leading the state. They look to Rochester as an example of that. We want to continue to accelerate and push that. And we're pushing home ownership as a means of that as well. But housing is the number one issue across the country. You know, I'm a member of the U.S. Conference of Mayors. It is always number one, even before a lot of the other things. I mean, opioids, gun violence, those are big topics, but housing always comes in at number one on all the surveys.
You're going to hear the music in 1 minute. So what's going on with water? What's happening tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night, we're going to have a webinar about Rochester and its water. A lot of people don't know that Rochester is ranked in the best as it relates to water. As you know, we want to be lead free by 2030, and we're on the path to make sure that we replace every single lead pipe in the city of Rochester. It's not sexy. It's not something everybody pays attention to, but it is extremely important that people know why water is important and why we have to continue to make investments in critical infrastructure. Because sometimes you'll have people say, why are you investing in infrastructure? Well, because if you don't invest in that infrastructure, you will hurt people down the line. And we don't want to end up like Flint and some of the other cities that have had water crises. So we're talking about the investments that we're making to make sure that we can be proactive in terms of making sure that our water is top-notch, and we want to make sure that we continue to do that. Webinar tomorrow night. You can sign up. You can sign up on the city's website. I urge everyone to attend, and I promise you that it would only be an hour.
You promised an hour or less.
Yes, or less.
As he said, it's not the sexiest topic. It is very important.
Right.
And I want to say we'll put a link if you want to sign up in our show notes for this program. So we'll add that as well. Mayor Malik Evans, I want to say there are times where you are tough on journalists, and there are times where you're frustrated with the press, but you're also someone who always says yes, and you answer every question we ask. And I want to thank you for that.
That's right. The Third Estate is very important.
Well, thank you for making time for us.
Thank you for having me.
And that's Rochester Mayor Malik Evans. We, of course, will have city council members and others talking about a lot of these issues that we kind of just got into. We'll spend a lot more time with the Our Future Fund and a lot more here in the weeks to come. More connections coming up in a moment.